L-E-D-E-N-E-T.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 100% match on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Go to our Twitter page at 102.5 The Game to vote on our Nashville sports bracket determining the best Nashville athlete of the last 30 years. Voting begins today at 9 o'clock on the Phil Bredesen region, so make sure you go out and vote on that today at 9 o'clock. The voting takes place through April the 15th. And fellas, we were discussing yesterday on the show, looking ahead at the Tim Corbin region with David Price being the number one seed, and we have the results of that region. David Price with 88% of the vote against Keenan Reynolds. I don't think a huge surprise there, fellas, for the margin of victory for David Price.
Nope, that he's a gimme, I'd say, moving forward. But I'm glad, I mean, Keenan Reynolds, I'm glad he got the recognition, because he, you know, sometimes you forget, you know, people who weren't in, you know, either pro stars or who didn't play locally in college. You know, you're talking about a great high school player and really a fantastic college career for Keenan Reynolds.
Yes, so I'm glad that I was honestly kind of surprised that he got 12% of the vote. So good for him. That's good for him right there. The 8-9 matchup in this region was very interesting. And, Joe, I mentioned to you the other day when we were breaking down all of the regions that I waffled back and forth on John Henderson and Paul Kariya. Probably like literally 10 times I changed my pick on it. I ended up going with John Henderson. The people, Joe, have gone in a different direction. Paul Kariya with 67% of the vote of the final tally against John Henderson. That margin of victory was a little surprising to me.
Yeah, no, I'm very surprised by that. I think that probably speaks to, you know, we got a lot of hockey fans who listen, obviously, a lot of Predators fans who listen. So, like, I see that result, and I think a lot of the things that are going to involve Predators might swing Predators' way, the way of the particular Predators. And I may be right in the end about Pekka having a real chance to win this thing.
Might be.
We'll see.
Frank Wycheck, the number 4 seed against 13th seeded Dansby Swanson. Wycheck wins with 68% of the vote. So a good fight by Dansby Swanson as the 13th seeded player there.
Yep, that's about as expected for me too.
Brant Snedeker, the 5th seed, going up against 12th seeded Juwan Jennings. And this one was interesting to me, Joe, because you're talking about an individual sport athlete going up against a football guy in Juwan Jennings locally here in Nashville in high school, and then, of course, went on to play for the Tennessee Vols. I thought Jennings may be able to give up enough of a fight to win and pull off the upset. He does not. Brant Snedeker finishes with 64% of the vote.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I thought that would be really, really close. I think Snedeker is the right choice there. You know, you're talking about, you know, one of the best golfers in the world, you know, a guy who's been doing it for a while at a high level. And, you know, this is, again, these things, it's going to be very heavy football and hockey, some basketball. There aren't a lot of athletes from other sports. I think Snedeker clearly is one who I think has a chance to do something. But I thought that Jennings, because he was so popular this year with the Vols, he's been a fan favorite. I think really he was the heartbeat of that team this year. And just the fact that, you know, there are so many Tennessee football fans, I thought that would be closer.
Well, it's funny because when I went on Twitter, I saw that someone quote tweeted the voting tweet for that one and said hashtag Vols Twitter. Yeah. So that's when I thought, oh boy, it's going to be 80% Juwan Jennings right at this point. If all Twitter gets involved in things, it's probably going to go swing the Vols side. But
yes,
it didn't this time. So good deal.
Yeah, Vol Twitter. Yeah, man. When they get Vol Twitter on something, usually something's going to happen.
Maybe the easiest upset of the entire tournament to predict was the 6-11 matchup between Ryan Suter and Jordan Matthews. Ryan Suter, not a very popular figure here in Nashville. Jordan Matthews wins easily with 71% of the vote.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it was really interesting, even, you know, Suter being seated there at six. Terrific player. I guess, you know, you just have to look at what someone did. But, you know, because of how people around here feel about him, you know, you could make a case for him to be seated a little bit lower. But I guess that's not going to really go in. You know, you're going to let the people show how they feel in the voting. So I'm not surprised that he got clapped by Jordan Matthews.
Joe, the largest margin of victory in the first round of the Tim Corbin region, Chris Johnson over Jalen Hurd, the 3-seed Chris Johnson against 14-seeded Jalen Hurd. Johnson with 90% of the vote.
Yeah, that's a blowout. Not too surprising. Probably speaks to a little bit, you know, how strongly people still feel about Chris Johnson. I mean, he had some great years here, including, you know, the 2,000-yard year. And then Jalen Hurd, I think there's another guy who, great prep player, had some really good seasons with the Vols, but then the way that ended, I think probably a lot of Tennessee fans and just sports fans from around here don't have the same feeling for him they did before he left Tennessee.
And now we get to your boy, Rex Rode, and your boy, Munson. Kevin Byard, the mayor of Murfreesboro, the 7th-seeded Kevin Byard against the 10th-seeded Joseph Newgarden. Byard, with 89% of the vote, moves on past the 10th-seeded Joseph Newgarden.
Race is pass.
Yeah. Race is pass. Wow. Nice.
Well done.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, this was a very mismatched 7-10 game, and kind of tells me Marquise and I may have a point here. We'll see. But Byard is very popular right now. And as Marquise pointed out, he's also the guy who was great at MTSU. So he's got he's been around here a long time. It's a great story. One of the best safeties in the NFL. And he's going to be that second round. It'll be real interesting.
I promise Deion Sanders will know his name by the end of this bracket. I'm telling you right
now. You
better. Yeah, this will be it. This will be the thing.
This will be the thing that Deion Sanders will learn Kevin Byard's name after this.
I'm not going to lie, fellas. It made me a little nervous because I look at what happened in the next round. Number 2-seeded Shea Weber against the 15th-seeded Mike Miner. Shea Weber advances, as we all expect, 82% of the vote. So I would expect it like somewhere in the 90s against Mike Miner.
Yeah, I would have too. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I still think there's a really strong feeling for Shea Weber here. I think it's interesting because I do also think, you know, when he was traded, even though there was definitely a lot of people like, oh, man, I can't believe Shea Weber is not going to be here, I still feel like that was largely embraced among Predators fans, you know, at that time. And obviously it worked out well. That's I don't know. It's gonna be really interesting. That is gonna be, you know, in the NCAA tournament, I think the second round you have some of your best games of the entire tournament. You know, 4 or 5 matchups and things like 3-6 matchups, even 2-7s can be great. This is a 2-7 that I think has potential to go to the wire.
And now we look ahead to the Phil Bredesen region. Voting begins today at 9 o'clock on our Twitter account at 1025 The Game. Eddie George is the 1-seed. The 8-9 matchup, very interesting to me, Joe, and we're going to have the 8-seed on our show later today at 9 o'clock. John Jenkins will join us at 9 o'clock, former Vanderbilt guard. He's the 8-seed going up against the 9th-seeded Steve Sullivan, former Predator player who had a great impact with the Nashville Predators. Those 8-9 matchups, really tough to predict.
Yeah, now with what we've seen with you know, the Predators, you know, representation, I think I would probably favor Sullivan, but who knows? I mean, we'll see. John Jenkins, a very, very, again, great high school history along with the Vanderbilt history. I'm sorry, he was the one who dunked on you. Is that right?
He
dunked
sure
on
was.
You?
Yes. It was.
Dunked
it was disrespectful.
On you. Dunked on Robbie Stanley's head. I mean, there's a long list of achievements there. So that one, you know, we'll see with that. We talked about Vol Twitter. we'll see if Vanderbilt Twitter can make something happen there.
An interesting 4-13 matchup. Mike Fisher, the 4 seed. Marcus Mariota, the 13 seed. We'll see how popular Mariota truly is among some core fan base, some core of the Titans fan base here in this matchup.
That's got to be the ultimate nice guy matchup,
it
right?
It is.
I mean, like, everyone likes both of those guys personally. Even if you're a Titans fan who's been anti-Mariota all along and you never thought he was good, and you have to like him personally, right?
Sure.
And Mike Fisher, I mean, I think Mike Fisher, you talk about Shea Weber and his popularity. I would put Mike Fisher in terms of like likability among fans. I would put him right up there with a Pecorine.
Oh yeah.
I think I'm trying to think of anyone else who would be in that rarefied air. I think Fisher, Rene, maybe Yossi too now at this point, but I very exclusive company when it comes to that. So Fisher, Mariota, that is absolutely, if you're talking about super nice, polite guys, that's the nice guy battle. And I'm really interested to see how that goes.
And Joe, real quickly, I think another 6-11 matchup that's ripe for an upset. Golden Tate, the 6 seed, Blaine Bishop, the 11th seed.
Yeah, like to me, Blaine Bishop is underseeded there based on achievement, but also popularity. I mean, look, as a general NFL fan, when he played, I loved watching Blaine Bishop because he was one of those not very big safeties who just packed a punch. I think he's got he's to me the clear favorite to advance there.
So remember, you can vote on the Phil Bredesen region starting today at 9 o'clock on our Twitter account at 1025.
I will say this. I think Kevin Dyson is going to be in the Sweet 16.
The 14th seed, huh? You think so?
I think Kevin. I'm telling you, man, and this is no disrespect to Ron Mercer. I love some Ron Mercer, but he could have been in my starting five yesterday that I drafted.
Oh, wow.
But I just think that play alone, Kevin Dyson will get to the Sweet 16.
That's an interesting point. It very well may happen.
I think so. Joe?
I think he'll advance. I won't be surprised if he advances. I think Blaine Bishop has Sweet 16 written all over him.
Yeah, so it'll be an 11 versus 14 matchup in the next round. That's pretty good.
Yeah, it happens sometimes.
When we come back, Les Carpenter, who covers the Redskins for the Washington Post, will join us. We'll get into the draft plans for the Washington Redskins as we look ahead to the NFL draft. That's next. This is Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic taking you through this Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. The NFL draft is right on the horizon and a lot of eyes on the Washington Redskins with the number 2 overall pick. And to help us talk more about that, we bring on Les Carpenter of the Washington Post, who covers the Washington Redskins. Les, thanks for taking time to come on with us today. Hope you and your family are doing well during this time.
Oh, thanks. Same with you. I was sitting here just talking to your producer. I'm just sitting in my home office like I do anyway this time of year, so it doesn't feel all that different for me right now.
that's a good point. I've had
a lot of free agency and a lot of draft.
That's right. See, a lot of same stuff going on. Well, Les, I want to start, because obviously when you look at the mock drafts, most everybody has the Redskins taking Chase Young, but CBS Sports came out with kind of an interesting scenario yesterday that had the Redskins drafting Tua Tagovailoa and not taking Chase Young. How likely do you think it is that Washington will select anybody other than Chase Young in the draft?
I mean, every indication I continue to get is that Chase Young would be the guy. Obviously, they have taken a long look at Tua, just as they took a long look at Joe Burrow. The way I understand it is that, especially with Tua, you want to be absolutely certain that you're not passing up on a guy that you just think could really be the guy, and there's just no way you ever not take him. But I think they've done that due diligence. I think they also were doing their due diligence anyway, just in case, say, Cincinnati takes Chase Young out of nowhere, and then what do you do? So I think they've taken a long look at all these guys. I just think Chase Young fits where they want to be right now. I mean, you've got a new coach coming in Rivera, who in Carolina, I mean, he built a team on a big defensive front that was very aggressive. They have a really good group of defensive tackles. It's probably their best strength. And then you kind of look at, you got Ryan Kerrigan last year of his contract as a as a pass rusher. He's obviously had a lot of success. And then you've got Montez Sweat as another pass rusher they think could be good. And then you add Chase Young with that. It just, all of that to me makes me think that that's the way they'll go. It just, they could have a really good defensive front, a very aggressive one, and then a really good pass rush. And I, you know, the rest of the defense is better when you have a really good pass rush.
Is it possible, do you think, Les, that they could, you know, obviously there's a lot of interest in Tua. People may be trying to move up. Miami may be trying to make sure they can get him. Could the Redskins trade out of there and still end up with Chase Young? Or, you know, even just another, maybe I've seen some Jeffrey Okuda also, the cornerback from Ohio State, another need there. Do you think the trade down scenario is viable here?
I mean, it's viable if they get that offer that blows them away, but I think it's got to be a really, really good offer. And the things I kind of hear, you know, tossed around, oh, Miami can send 2 first rounds this year and maybe a later pick somewhere this year to move up. I don't know if that would be enough for them to pass on Chase Young. I think it would, or it, should they really, really want Tua, you know, give up on him too. I mean, I think that they would really have, I think there would have to be multiple number ones, something like that. And I'm just guessing here. I've got no indication from them what they would take. But my sense is they would have to be blown away, that it would just be such a good offer that it's just, well, there's just too many potential impact players they could get with draft picks that they have to make that trade. But I don't know if that, I don't know that they'll ever get that offer either.
Les Carpenter from the Washington Post on the line with us. And Les, obviously the Redskins drafted Dwayne Haskins last year out of Ohio State. What's the vibe like in the D.C. area about Dwayne Haskins after his first year?
Well, the vibe in the D.C. area, where ironically he's from, you know, I think the fans were a little disappointed. But, you know, the Redskins fans have been disappointed for a while. And, you know, it was a disappointing year. I thought he played well, and I think this is internally the vibe with the new staff that's coming in. I thought he played well at the end of the year. It was a terrible start for him. It wasn't fitting with him. Jay Gruden, who had wanted a different – I think that they would have much rather had Daniel Jones than make this. I don't think they really wanted to start with a rookie quarterback anyway in a year where Jay's job was on the line. There was a lot of things that kind of went against Haskins early on. And he was slow to kind of fit in, understand what it takes to be an NFL quarterback, all of that. I thought he picked it up very quickly as the year went on. And I've always been told this, that he's incredibly sharp and he's very good. When you show him something, when you give him a concept, a play or something, he remembers it always. And that really was apparent at the end of the year. He didn't have a lot of playmakers to go with him. But I thought his play really picked up, and every indication I've gotten from that front office, from, you know, some of the coaches a little bit, is that he really kind of took to heart what Ron Rivera was trying to tell him, and even going back to last year when Bill Callahan was the interim coach, you know, this is how you act as an NFL quarterback. This is what you do. This is how much time you spend in the facility and all that. And, you know, I think it seems like he took it to heart. It seems like he really kind of has shown, I think, that he probably, in their mind, is the guy they want to go with.
Yeah, it's amazing how quickly people want to give up on QBs when it used to be, you know, you try to sit them out for a year and it goes so fast. Like, Josh Rosen is, like, washed up now, right? I mean, it's amazing to think about that. But Les, do you think that Kyle Allen, is that a quarterback competition this fall?
Well, I think Kyle Allen was probably another sort of statement that said, you know, we're probably not taking Tua. I think by bringing him in, remember, he spent 2 years at Carolina, not just with Ron Rivera, but with Scott Turner, the Ian North Turner, and Scott Turner came here as the offensive coordinator. You know, he knows that offense really, really well, and he started 14 games or whatever it is in his career with that offense. So if he comes in, especially with, you know, we got to figure there's OTAs, maybe there's even some kind of reduced training camp, whatever it is, he's going to have the leg up of knowing the offense, which is huge. You know, I could even see him early on in that job just for that reason until, you know, Haskins has a chance to kind of catch up with it and it becomes second nature to him. So I think that's where the competition for Haskins comes in. I think that is legitimate. I wouldn't even be stunned if Kyle Allen doesn't walk out at the very beginning of whatever, when they open camp and takes the first reps just because he's going to know it better. But I still think ultimately it's an insurance policy, and you know, something should happen to Haskins, or you know, just doesn't take or whatever. You've got a guy who knows everything, and you can kind of function from that and go from there.
Les, you mentioned Ron Rivera coming into the fold here with the Washington Redskins. What sort of challenge does he have in front of him with this roster that the Redskins have right now as constructed?
Well, the interesting thing is, you know, he has said this over and over in this week to some of the guys that have signed with the team. You know, you kind of hear this from them too. A lot of people believe that despite the 3-13 record last year, there's a lot of talent on this team. And especially on the defensive side, I kind of agree with that. It was a defense that just for whatever reason did not function to the level that I think the talent was there. Some of that was because the talent was very young, with a lot of guys who were first and second year players. You know, I think the scheme, I think Jack Del Rio coming in, I think a lot of things will make that defense play up. And I think there's stuff there that says this is a team that can build upon that very quickly. The key is going to be on the offense. I mean, they just don't have enough playmakers. I mean, Terry McLaurin, the receiver, really came on last year out of nowhere. I think it was, you know, when they drafted him, they thought they were getting a special teams player, and well, maybe he could eventually fit in somewhere. Instead, he just snatched that number one job. They don't have a tight end to go with him. They don't have another key receiver at this point. They have to get playmakers. They got a lot of questions at running back. They have a lot of guys, but it's a lot of questions. And they also have this other question at left tackle, which is such a key position. You have the Pro Bowl player with Trent Williams, but Trent doesn't want to be here. He wants to be traded, and what happens there? So they've got a lot of questions to answer on the offense.
So, Les, I just wondered what you think about where things are right now with everything moving forward. You know, I'm seeing, you know, varied opinions on that. Some people think the NFL is tone deaf for, you know, having the draft at the same time. And I know some GMs aren't happy about the logistical aspect of it, but what do you think about the NFL sort of going business as usual right now?
It is a very NFL thing, isn't it?
Yes.
I have a lot of thoughts on that, and they all kind of are jumbled and all over the place. And I understand exactly what a lot of the GMs are saying, and I kind of scratch my head sometimes and think, why are they going ahead with this? I mean, what kind of a draft is this going to be if Roger Goodell's reading the names from his living room or, you know, whatever it is? It almost seems just foolish to do, especially if you know there are going to be no OTAs, then why not hold a draft, say, in June? You know, when maybe things have cleared up a little bit. Who knows? On the other hand, I got to admit, you know, I thought that they would delay free agency, and free agency went off without too much of a hitch. And it kind of, you know, I'm sure you know where you guys are there. I mean, you're probably talking a lot of NFL free agency. I mean, it's actually put the NFL out in the spotlight that it completely wouldn't have had otherwise if you had March Madness and other things going on. So I kind of wonder, well, you know, maybe this is sort of a genius move. This has given us something to talk about and think about at this time. So I go back and forth on it.
Les Carpenter from the Washington Post has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Les, thanks so much for taking the time to come on with us here today, man. We really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely.
Thanks, Les.
Thanks, Les. Appreciate you. When we come back, could we see four quarterbacks go in the top 10 in the draft? A lot of people think that may be a possibility. We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tua says he's ready to go, man. Don't worry about his hip. Welcome back into Morning Drive.
Stop asking me questions about it.
Stop asking me questions. That's like as passive-aggressive is the right word that you'll ever see from Tua Tagovailoa.
Hey, excuse me, am I bothering you with these questions? Actually, yes, you are, sir. Stop.
Marcus Mariota would never.
Never would get like that on SportsCenter. Tua Tagovailoa, ladies and gentlemen, his hip is ready to go. And look, Joe, in all seriousness, like, let's be honest here. If Tua didn't have these injury concerns, there's a pretty good chance. I mean, he would be right there in the conversation with Joe Burrow in terms of the number one pick in the draft. I still think Burrow would get the nod at the end of the day. But we did, you know, CBS Sports, I mentioned it with Les Carpenter in our last segment, came out and had just kind of a scenario where the Redskins select Tua with their second pick in the draft. And that may seem crazy that they just drafted Dwayne Haskins, and he's only had 1 year there in Washington. You've got a new coach coming in. But if you think Tua is that good and is going to be that good in the NFL, don't you at least have to consider it if you're the Redskins? I know Chase Young was outstanding, and I think he's going to be a really good NFL player. But Tua, at the quarterback position, if you think he's healthy and could be a long-term answer there, I would have more confidence in him than I do Dwayne Haskins.
Yeah, I just don't. So much of it is really just about Haskins. I mean, if you after this year basically with him, if you're really unsure and you absolutely love Tua, then you could pull the trigger. But I think Les Carpenter was right that the signing of Kyle Allen is kind of an indicator that that's not the way they're thinking. And look, Chase Young, it's not like quarterback is the only position where you can get, you know, an all-time great player, an anchor for a great team. I mean, Chase Young could be that guy. I think he could be unbelievable in the NFL. But this is how it goes, Robbie. I mean, you get around the draft, and the bottom line is teams talk about, okay, what do we have to do to be great? And you've got to have a great quarterback in theory. You know, you could build a team and then have an okay quarterback and still win it all. That has happened. But most teams get enamored with the idea of a generational quarterback at this time of year. And I could see some teams thinking that is Tua. I think you're right. If Tua was, if he'd never had all this stuff, he'd be in the discussion. Although I think Burrow's season in 2019 was so just consistently off the charts great that I think he'd still be the guy.
I want to get your thoughts on this Munson too, because obviously you're a guy that follows Tua and that program very closely. Like, how surprised are we by what he said there, that basically he was saying, look, if I had to go play tomorrow, I feel pretty good about it. Like, there were talks when this injury first happened about him not being ready to play next season at any point, and now we're sitting here in April, and if you take him at his word, I mean, Tua says he's feeling pretty close to 100%.
Yeah, see, that's why, like, it was a lot of overreaction, maybe a little bit on his injury. Like, I know a lot of people are saying, well, his career is over. He probably will never be able to play football again because they look at certain injuries in the past. But this is 2020. People prepare different. People's bodies are different. So I knew that it was still a chance. But, you know, and this is why I always told Alabama fans who, you know, I graduated there, so I know a lot of them, when they would tell me, hey, man, do you think Tua's going to stay for another year? And I said, it's highly unlikely that he's going to come back to Alabama to prove something or whatever. If he's healthy enough to throw the football, he's going to test his waters in the NFL draft. Because guess what? He's not going to escape the first round without being touched by an NFL team. So I think it's a good scenario if he goes to a team that already has a quarterback. That's why I wanted him to kind of go to the Chargers, maybe, who have Tyrod Taylor, who they can have, you know, start Tyrod Taylor for a year and then go with Tua for a following year. Kind of play that role that Ben Simmons played, Blake Griffin played in the NBA, where they sat out a whole year and then all of a sudden come back and their rookie year be there, you know, the second year in the league. So that's what I always thought his timetable was when it came to his injury. But, I mean, if he's moving forward with, you know, his throwing motions look fine from videos that I've saw. I think he can play his rookie year.
Trent Dilfer continues to be the quarterback whisperer, Joe Rexroth.
That's right. That is right. So, a lot. Yeah, that's where, for people who don't know, I mean, that's who's been – you know, working out hard with Tua here. I still think it would be much better for him, though, guys, if he can at least – I mean, I think this is true of just about any rookie quarterback in the NFL. Yeah, if you can have a little bit of time to sit back and not have to have everything thrust on your shoulders right away, I think it's beneficial. I mean, even if you're quarterbacking a terrible team, and usually the really high picks are, you know, Joe Burrow's going to come in for a – team in Cincinnati that was awful last year. There's still a pressure that comes with being a pick that high, being the quarterback, you know, and it just, I think it can mess with you. I mean, you can also look at a guy like Baker Mayfield, and it's not all on him, but I think a lot of people thought one thing when he had a hot streak late in his rookie year, and now it's like, okay, maybe take your foot off the gas a little bit with this guy. And I just think it would be great for Tua to be able to sit a little bit and, you know, and ease into the job.
So a lot of times in the draft, when we see quarterbacks start to go off the board, they come off the board in a hurry. Do we think there's a chance that four quarterbacks go in the top 10 in the draft when it begins on April 23rd? Well, Todd McShay of ESPN thinks there's a pretty good possibility that that happens. Here's what Todd McShay had to say.
I'm not married to it, and I do think that Jordan Love is probably the least likely to be in the top 10, even though I've bet him. But I will say this. I think when we look back in 5 years, he could be the second or third best quarterback of this year's class. Everyone in the league is in love with Joe Burrow. I mean, he's the guy. Coming out of LSU, what he's done, just his background, his pedigree, how tough he is, how he played in the biggest games on the biggest stages. Tua Tagovailoa, they love him the same way. It's just, can he stay healthy? After that, though, it's a big drop-off, and there are a lot of different opinions. I mean, there are guys I talk to in the league that love Herbert. They think that Herbert's going to be a great player. And there are some guys who are like, I wouldn't even go there in the first round, and the same thing with Jordan Love. So it's going to be really interesting to see, especially now that some of the veteran quarterbacks are starting to move around, and there aren't as many teams in the top 15 that really need quarterbacks, but we always see it happen. There's going to be a team or two that moves up because they're so afraid of entering next season without a quarterback that they can at least develop, hopefully become their starter.
So, Joe, how likely do you think it is that we see four quarterbacks go in the top 10 in the draft?
Oh, I think it's quite likely. And McShay, by the way, so his mock right now has the Chargers, LA Chargers, taking Love at 6. And then he has Herbert going to Jacksonville at 9 after, you know, Burrow and Tua going to where everybody thinks they'll go, Cincinnati, Miami. So that would be really interesting in Jacksonville if they go after one of these guys. I wouldn't be surprised at all. And unless the Jags are on the Tank for Trevor train,
yeah,
that they could be on this year. But it's just so hard to, you know, how do you put in the work for an entire year and everything, and then that's your entire mission as an organization. You know, I think it's definitely feasible that they would go get a QB. And then I think I like Jordan Love a lot. I really do. Herbert's the guy of the four that I'm the most skeptical of. I know he's got the size and the arm and everything, but when I've watched him play, I've just sort of, it's left me wanting for something. So could be wrong. You know, I think so much of quarterback success in the NFL is situation too, and where they go, and obviously health. But I think all of those guys could be good. I really like Jordan Love, and I know one franchise that has been very interested in him for a while, apparently, is Indianapolis Colts.
Wouldn't that be something to see them take a quarterback in the first round, Joe? I look around, and obviously you look at Joe Burrow, and he seems like a can't-miss prospect. But you just mentioned something that I think is very interesting, and that is the situation. Obviously, you know, you're going into Cincinnati, where we all expect Joe Burrow to go. It doesn't seem like a very good situation right now. If you're Joe Burrow, like, do we believe that he's like a 100% can't-miss prospect, or are the Bengals in such bad shape that it could really derail his development for the next, you know, 4 or 5 years in his career?
Yeah, well, there's no such thing as 100%. I think he's going to go in there and elevate them and be really good in the NFL. I don't care what anyone does in college. I think it's really hard to project, you know, greatness in the NFL. I think Peyton Manning's a guy that you felt pretty good about. But then again, I felt really good about Ryan Leaf too. At the same time, you know, at least Peyton, 50% on that. If you thought both those guys were going to be, you know, like generational quarterbacks, there aren't a lot. It's hard to scale it back a little bit when you're talking about greatness in the NFL. But I think Burrow, man, I'll be surprised if he's not good to very good and elevates that place. But yeah, that's the problem when you're a quarterback that accomplished, is that you're going to go to a terrible team. And sometimes those, it depends on the organization too. I mean, I don't have time right now in this segment to list all the guys I think could have been good NFL quarterbacks who were picked by the Detroit Lions, and therefore their careers went to the toilet. You know, I mean, if you have a bad organization over time, a bad ownership, that tends to infect a lot of different people.
When we come back, how will the Titans prepare for their draft on a remote basis? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Titans general manager John Robinson talking about how the Titans are going to approach this draft beginning on April the 23rd. Of course, Roger Goodell and the NFL have announced that the draft will take place as normally scheduled and will do so on a remote basis. So, Joe, you look at what is going on there with John Robinson and not only the Titans but every NFL team. They're trying to come up, you know, with different plans and kind of different ways about going about doing things with the draft not going on as normal in Las Vegas. I saw yesterday, I think, where the Saints have come out and said that they're using Gail Benson's Dixie Brewery as a location for the Saints Draft Central in New Orleans. So the Saints getting creative there. Looks like they're going to host their draft at Gail Benson's Dixie Brewery for their front office as their headquarters there. So a lot of NFL teams kind of being forced to think about some contingency plans on how to approach this year's draft.
Yeah, and just for people that don't know, yeah, so that's, you know, that's the team owner. So it's the team owner's
right.
brewery. So
right.
So it's not like they're like, hey, let's go find a random brewery. Local business and help them out. You know, it's they're probably doing okay. But yeah, that's an interesting one. It's I guess I'd be surprised if we see a ton of that. You know, I mean, I think there's still some level of risk factor if you're going to like a public place and setting up, and I know you're going to probably disinfect the heck out of it and all that, but I guess I would think that most teams will be doing this remotely or with, I guess, limited gathering in a certain place to you know, to try to communicate with each other. But I think everyone, not just NFL people, everyone in the world has been getting pretty used to, I think Zoom stock has exploded here. And
just skyrocketed.
Yeah. You know,
by the day.
I mean, I know for, like, at home, at my house, I've got a planned Zoom happy hour coming up with some buddies. And we've already done that with some of my wife's friends and some family stuff, singing happy birthday to nephews and things like that. And it's you kind of get used to it. You kind of get used to like that Brady Bunch kind of you know, setup. Everybody got the little picture, and you can look around and see everybody there. So I think that's mostly what it's going to be for these teams, and I think they can function just fine doing this.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have made a big deal about this in terms of why would you do this and not have the draft like it's normally scheduled to be, and you know, having the picks read off from a different location, and the guys in the draft aren't going to have the same experience as most other NFL players have had. Yeah, I mean, a lot of us this year are having different experiences than most other people have had with what's gone on over the course of the last month here specifically in our country. I really don't think at the end of the day having this draft remotely is that big of a deal. Like, I really don't. I honestly think it's going to be really good for the country. I think it's going to be much needed, and I think it will probably be the most watched draft in the history of the NFL.
I agree. I'm all for it. I don't think that anything. I think any time anyone right now can advance their business, advance commerce, do something, I think it's good. I don't think it's tone deaf if something is able to continue on and move things. This is something that's going to be, like you said, watched. It's something that is going to be good for advertisers. It's good for the NFL. Anything that can move right now in terms of the economy, I think should be embraced. Just because a lot of things can't doesn't mean that if you can, you should sit back too. I mean, I think we need everything that we can get to get out there and, you know, and make money. I mean, you know, So for one, that's one part of it. And then, like you said, there's just the distraction part of it that I think the country needs. And I think if Roger Goodell is sitting in his home and reading the picks off, maybe people think that's weird. To me, that's exactly like, that's sort of like, hey, everybody, here's what we should all be doing.
Yeah.
Here's the commissioner of the NFL. He's sitting in his home. This is what you should be doing. This is what we all need to be doing so that this can end someday.
It is going to be interesting to kind of hear about and watch the process of how the teams are preparing for the draft remotely. Just kind of watch that unfold. And John Robinson was asked about kind of the prospects of preparing for the draft remotely yesterday in that conference call. Here's what John Robinson had to say.
You know, all 32 teams are kind of in the same boat. We have access to our database remotely with all of the draft evaluations, the medical information that we have. There's obviously not a lot of timing and testing data for players that either didn't work out at the combine or didn't go to the combine. There's some guys that worked last spring or ran last spring or got measured last spring that you have to kind of rely on that information. But as far as the, you know, the draft board and the talks, you know, we talk or we have web conferences daily with the scouts. Coach Vrabel and I talk on a daily basis, you know, just about pods of players that we have seen, and we're working through the draft board. We have a draft board within our database program that I work off of, as well as an Excel spreadsheet of the draft board that we're working off of too.
Lots of tools there for John Robinson remotely that he and the Titans have been able to come up with and to develop and to talk about on a daily basis. I'm sure every NFL team is the same way in terms of how they're operating right now. So, you know, we've talked about maybe not as much information being out there. It sounds like there's still going to be a pretty good bit of information for general managers and front offices and scouting departments to make their decisions off of in this draft.
Oh, no question. I mean, look, I think basically what you're taking away is that last push of like, okay, what's my gut really tell me on this guy or that guy? You're certainly taking that out. And I know GMs like that. I know John Robinson is huge on that, on the visits and getting the guys, you know, one-on-one and just kind of having a, you know, conversation about different things. I know one thing, and this is something, I mean, I think I wrote this for the Tennessean like 4 years ago or whatever, 3 years ago, but one of the things he always asks is, you know, hey, what's my name? Which is hilarious to think about. But he said, you'd be amazed. These guys are traveling around. They're, you know, it's like it's a whirlwind and they're going around. It's like, okay, Titans now and, you know, Cowboys. And, you know, so, you know, he's impressed with guys who, okay, this is John Robinson. That's who this is. You know, guys who, it's just like anyone preparing for a job interview. Are you prepared? Have you researched the company here? Can you tell me something about my company? What do you think we do well or don't do well? You know, or are you just coming in and just saying, hey, hire me? So, like, there's an example of a question just to see if, you know, if it's like, oh, yeah, you're John Robinson. Or if it's like, oh man, you know, like stuff like that. Those conversations, I think GMs really can get a feel and help their gut. But the bottom line, the information, I mean, first of all, it's 90%. Most people will tell you 90% of it is their game film. And then they've already had the combine. They've had tons of interviews. You're leaning a little bit more on your scouts now. But it's – I don't think – no one wants to do this, and hopefully this never happens again. But I think there's plenty for everyone to go on here.
I wonder what, like, the if this is like a Zoom call or, you know, a video conference call, or if this is going to be made available like live on TV. Like, are we going to see John Robinson on like this Zoom conference calling and discussing trades while he's on television? Like, obviously it's not going to be mic'd up the whole time, but it would be really fascinating kind of the different options that the NFL could go about maybe making this draft a little bit more transparent from the side of what teams talk about in the draft room, what teams are discussing, like how they approach, when they're on the clock. Like, a lot of times fans are looking around and, you know, the Giants have been on the clock for 10 minutes and they've got 30 seconds left. Why have they not made a decision yet? It'd be interesting, I think, from a casual fan point of view to kind of see what's going on in draft rooms while teams are on the clock. I think it'd be awesome.
That's a great question. Yeah, and when they come down on the clock, then they show like the Giants on the phone, you know, like, you better hurry, you know. And so we're not going to have that. It would be really interesting if they could just have everybody's little Brady Bunch set up and bounce around. You know, here's how the Packers staff looks right now. You know, I'm guessing the teams would be paranoid about that and say, I don't want anybody else listening to our conversation. What if you guys mess it up and all of a sudden you broadcast something we're discussing, and now, you know, this team we're trying to make a trade with knows what we're doing or whatever. Like, I would think that that would be what would cross the minds of the NFL actual teams, but I'd love to think that they could do something like that.
Can you imagine what Mike Vrabel's reaction would be if, like, the broadcast screwed up and accidentally put the Titans business out there that they were discussing live on a mic? That'd be awesome. It'd be good TV for Mike Vrabel there.
There'd be some actual, on-the-record, profane criticism of Roger Goodell. So
yes, there would.
That could be fun.
Maybe even some hands-on action there. The hands-on action that Mike Vrabel has been looking for might see some of that.
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah, no question about it. When we come back, Joe, The Athletic has come out with their top 100 sports movies of all time, and I've got to tell you, it has sent Marquise Munson into an absolute frenzy. I want to get into this next.
Oh boy.
This should be a very interesting conversation.
Yeah, oh boy, you're right, buddy.
Yeah, see, look, he's already fired
you're
up.
You're in for a treat next
segment. Okay, let's go.
He's already fired up. When we come back, we'll talk about that. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
L-E-T-E-N-E-T. Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 100% match on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.